Welcome, dear podcast listeners, to another edition of Review Episode for Between the Bubbles. I'm Darren.
I'm Braden.
And we are very excited to share with you how we felt about all the comics that we picked up. And like always, there are many. So
it was a little smaller than usual, but it's still a pretty hefty chunk.
You know, I'm in the single digits. Braden is in the lower double digits, which is pretty good because Braden's usually in the
I'm usually picking up 18, 19 a week. It's a real problem. My wife was making fun of me this week for it, slash wondering where all our money goes.
She should be proud of you. Anyway, so let's get started on a new company, Avatar. Well, not they're not new, but for us, I don't know how many issues we've gone from Avatar.
Just two. This is my second issue of Fashion Beast. This is issue two of Fashion Beast. For those of you who don't know anything about this book, it's an Alan Moore script from the heyday of Alan Moore, like back in the late 80s, early 90s. And this is basically a reimagining of Beauty and the Beast in a strange post-apocalyptic society with transvestism and fashion and all of those beautiful things. The first issue, I wasn't quite sure how I felt about this book, but this issue I really felt like it improved on the whole, and I felt really solid about it. I love the main character. I think she's a hilarious main character. She's emotive. She is interesting, and just it's a fun book to look at. It's beautifully, beautifully illustrated. Facundo Percio is the person who's doing the art, and it's just gorgeous, gorgeous to look at. It's a much better second issue, and this is Alan Moore's weirdness writ large. I mean, it really is. Fashion and Beauty and the Beast and transvestism and hidden people and lots of flipping the bird. There's no shortage of flipping the bird in this series, which just endears me to the main character even more every time she flips the bird. I would describe this book as flippant in every sense of the word.
Flippant.
Both in its attitude, in its tone, and in the fact that she just flips everybody off.
Wow.
I really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to see where it goes. The first issue I was really kind of hesitant about.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm pretty excited.
So what are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it an explore it, but I'm in this for the next... I mean, it's only 8 issues, so I'm going to keep picking it up. Unless something like super egregious happens, I will keep picking up Fashion Beast and finish out the miniseries.
Well, there you go. Now moving on to Dark Horse, I picked up, this is 2 issues of a miniseries, 2 out of 5 called Victories, and issue 1 came out in August, and it was okay. I mean, the premise of Victories is that, it reminds me of like a ripoff of Batman. In fact, that's why I picked it up, because the character looks like Batman. And I'm a sucker for covers, as we all know. So I'm like, I'm going to pick that up.
They're just doing their job right.
Yeah, so it's a lot like Gotham City, the city that, you know, crime is just rampant and there's no structure. But instead of just one superhero, you have a lot of superheroes in the city. And the main character, Faustus, is part of the Victories. But the premise is where do you draw that line? Do you kill people or not kill people? What do you do to root out evil? And we've seen this so many times in different stories.
Yeah, we have.
And some have done it really well, and others, quite frankly, have not. And issue 1 was okay. Issue 2, which came out in mid-September, was just flat-out terrible.
Oof, like, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's... Like, I understand swearing and sex have their place in stories, but when they do it so just gratuitously, in the sense where you feel like they're doing it just to kind of be edgy, but in an immature way,
yeah,
it doesn't feel like an adult comic book. It feels I feel insulted in my intelligence, if that makes sense.
Yeah, oh, that makes perfect sense.
So I'm going to give and ignore it, honestly. Issue 1, as I said, was okay, but issue 2 just kind of lost it for me. And even then, issue 1, there's this... A vigilante turned evil called the Jackal, and what does he do? He craps on one of his victims. You know what I mean? Like,
nice.
So
it sounds like if you want that like morality tale of do you kill or not and a Batman surrogate, just go buy Extermination.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly.
I've liked that one, so clearly it must be done better than this one.
Yeah, I didn't care for it. So once again, Victories, issue 1 and 2, Dark Horse. I'm not going to pick up the rest, and I'm going to ignore it. I really did not like it.
It's too bad.
All right.
It's too bad.
Now moving on to DC Vertigo, Action Comics 13. Okay, this issue, plot-wise, I'm sure there's some developments. I didn't pick up on a lot of them, if there are.
Because this is the fourth to last issue of Morrison's big arc. Because he was doing, he said, I want to do 16, I'm doing 16, and then
I'm done. This is a Halloween issue. And so for that reason, it's kind of fun. So what it's about is it's on Halloween, and it goes into the story of Dr. Zadu, who he, if you see, or if you read issue 4 or 5, or maybe it was 3, I think it's 3, when they talk about the death of Krypton, you see a guy reach out of the Phantom Zone with his claw, and it's Dr. Zadu, and so you get to know more who he is. And also he's later on issue 5 and or 4 and 5 when they go to the Tesseract, and which is this box inside Superman's brain. It was really cool. It didn't make a lot of sense, but it was awesome. So, as I said, does the story progress? Not really, but it was fun to get more details behind one of those characters who I was very intrigued about when I saw his claw and he was reaching out, because he knew that he was the main enemy of Jor-El. And so you get to see that. And he comes out of the Phantom Zone and fights Superman and whatnot. And it was a fun issue. I'm going to give an explore it. The backup issue, though, where it talks about Crypto, and it deals with basically how he was always there with Superman throughout his whole entire life. I love the backup issue. And look, I'm a dog person. I love dogs. I want a dog. I can't have one because I live in an apartment. But so that just resonated with me. And I'm going to give it an explore. It was a very, very fun issue. I am sure that there are plot developments that will be revealed later on.
That is how Morrison plays the game. You look at this issue
like, that's what he meant. So yep. Great issue. It was fun. Next up, Animal Man.
Animal 13. Man. Oof. I felt a really solid issue of Animal Man. It was extremely well plotted. I have to give Jeff Lemire props for that. And I feel like some of the art was really, really solid, but the backup story art, all of the story of the family in the past, didn't work for me. It was a backup artist. It was not Steve Pugh, who we're used to getting, and it kind of felt it. At least I did.
See, I'm gonna have to tell you, I disagree with you.
And that's fine. You can
disagree. I love this issue. When you see like Superwoman,
punching through the guts of Batwoman.
Yeah.
Oh, like I say. Steve Pugh's art is amazeballs, like it always. Yeah, and then
Flash has that root just go through his leg. Oh, wow. I mean, this was just...
It was gory, it was gross, it was nasty. It was everything you expect from a Animal Man comic.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'm going to give it an adore. I loved just the creepiness and the horror feeling of this whole zombie Earth. So I...
Yeah, I think I'm going to give this one an explore it ultimately, but... Rot World is turning out to be pretty exciting. The prologue issues weren't super, super great, but I'm really interested to see what happened to his family.
I guess I should correct myself, Supergirl. Sorry, it's really early. I'm still
it happens.
Waking up. Anyway,
ultimately, so like Supergirl, I said, I'm gonna give it an explore it. But it's a pretty great comic, all things considered, but it's that change between artists killed it for me.
I loved the art. I thought it was great. Moving on to Detective Comics 13, new writer.
How
John
was it?
Layman.
I've heard pretty good things about it.
Okay. If we didn't have any other Batman book, I would say definitely pick it up because it was a good, solid story.
Uh-huh.
It was entertaining. The Penguin. This is a further development of Penguin from Penguin Pain and Prejudice, if you read that, which if you haven't, I suggest you do. Your view of Penguin will greatly change after that.
Who wrote Pain and Prejudice?
Greg Hurwitz. That's why I was so excited.
That's right.
That's why I was so excited when he jumped onto Dark Knight.
But it hasn't been that good.
No, it hasn't. So it's Penguin. The one thing I have a complaint about his motivation to do what he's doing is kind of generic lame. It's just like I'm one of the main four families of Gotham, and I want to have my legacy. So I want my name on a building.
So who are the four main families? We've got the Cobblepots, the Waynes, the Caines.
Caines, which is Martha Wayne.
Martha Wayne was a Caine, yeah. That's why Batgirl or Batwoman and Batman are cousins.
Oh,
Yeah.
I didn't know she was like, I know her name was Katie Keene, but I didn't know it was
That's where do you think she gets all the toys? She can afford it because her colonel dad was the one who like broke with the, family and went to the military instead of business.
Oh, I don't know what the other one is. If you read Gates of Gotham, written by Scott Snyder and Kyle Higgins, they had the fourth family. Because that talks about them, because there are, who is it?
I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Anyway, so it was a solid issue. It was good. The artwork by Jason Fabik was incredible.
Was it?
Oh yeah. But I'm going to give an explore it because this is why.
So again, this is not the Batman book to buy. No. But if you're a Batman fan, pick it up.
Yeah, but even then, I'm not going to keep following it. And I love Batman.
Well, that's because you're buying too many other stuff.
Yeah, that's true. So I mean, if you're not buying a lot of stuff, you love Batman, I would definitely say check it out. But if you're going to get a Batman book, you get Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman.
It's true.
And this doesn't compare to that. Like, that first issue of Batman, you knew it was going to be an awesome series.
Oh, my word.
This one, you know, like, this will be good. It'll be solid. I didn't love it. And it wasn't screaming at me saying, oh, I need to pick this up and follow it. So I'm going to give it an explore. It was good. It's cool. The second best Batman book.
Okay.
So
cool.
Give that. Earth 2.
I know that you dropped this one.
I did. You stopped
picking up Earth 2 because we were both of us so disappointed in the Zero issue, which apparently we were in the minority. I don't understand why we were in the minority because that issue sucked. It was one of the worst Zero issues I picked up.
We're in the minority?
Yeah. A lot of people liked it.
Wow. There's nothing redeeming
about
it.
Maybe there was cocaine lining their issues, and so they sniffed it as they read, so they liked it better. All I know is I didn't get a buzz when I read it. I just got disappointed.
We got gypped.
Yeah, I just felt disappointed.
However,
we both enjoyed issue 4. No, we felt like finally it was great. It had been good to getting better to finally getting great. This, if that Zero issue hadn't ruined the month of September for this book, if this had come out in September, you would be like, I am still buying this book.
Should I go check it out?
I'll just loan it to you. You take it home with you this weekend. Let me know how you feel about it. Loved it. This is maybe the best issue so far. It's gorgeous to look at. It's very interesting. You're starting to see where these wonders, as they call the superheroes, are coming from, how they know each other. There's this world police organization that has some of these covert wonders. That's where the Atom comes from. That's where Hawkgirl used to be, but she's kind of broken off from them, which is why they know each other. And the most important thing is that this issue ends on a big kind of cliffhanger. First off, Mr. Terrific is back.
Oh, yeah.
That douchebag from the Zero issue. But that should, hopefully it'll make that Zero issue matter as he starts to become more and more involved in this. But anyway, in this issue, the Green Lantern goes into the Gray to try to stop the Gray from taking over the planet. And in the Gray is the ghost of his dead fiance.
No way.
And so it ends.
Sam, right?
Yep.
Sam.
It ends with them protecting Green Lantern's body because he has to leave his body to enter the Gray. The rest of, Hawkgirl, Adam, and the Flash are trying to stop Grundy from destroying Green Lantern's body while Green Lantern is down in the Gray trying to decide whether he can stop the Gray and finally completely sever his connection from Sam or not. And it just ends in this beautiful, heartbreaking picture. Oh, and they already launched nuclear missiles at DC. So there are nuclear missiles in the air headed towards DC. He is cuddling with his former fiance in the underworld. And
they're fighting Solomon Grundy.
This book was great. Thank you, Nicola Scott, for being amazing on art. Thank you, James Robinson, for finally delivering an amazing script. This was a great book. I know that a lot of people say Justice League Dark is the best team book that DC's putting out right now. If this stays at this caliber, this is the best team book to buy. It is the best DC team book to buy. It's stellar. Again, I'll send it home with you. You can tell me how you feel.
Yeah, wow. Because I had on my pull list, and he gave it to me like, look, Tim, I'm taking this off. And I gave it back to him, handed it back to him, got Detective Comics instead.
You might regret that after you read it. I'll let you know. We'll see next week.
Sounds good. You can
just give us a blurb as to whether or not you felt about it.
I'm excited to check it out because I was not expecting to be that good. All right, next up, Green Lantern 13. The first...
I've heard good things about it.
This was This was the best comic I picked up this week.
Was it really?
This is the first issue of the now Third Army crossover, right? Simon Baz is the, without a doubt, the most interesting and complicated Green Lantern ever created.
Clearly.
The fact that we have an American Muslim as a Green Lantern, the fact that we see how his family deals with persecution, not just from 9/11, but he's a car thief, and unfortunately, he stole a car that had a bomb in it.
Yeah.
So now his family's dealing with that repercussion and the guilt that he has about it. The fact that he is the reason that his brother-in-law is in a coma because they were car racing. And look,
I think I'm gonna have to borrow this one from you.
You need to.
We'll switch Green Lantern books. You can read Earth 2. Yeah. I'll read Green Lantern.
This is the coolest thing. And when it comes to politics, I'm very moderate. I'm not a big fan of either candidate. But they had President Obama in the beginning.
Really interesting.
I thought, because it's like, I love seeing, even if it was, you know, if it was a 19 or a 2007 and they had President Bush in there, I love it when they take real life people and put them in because it makes it feel like it's connected to our universe more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I loved it. And, you know, Amanda Waller knows all the different Green, except she doesn't know Kyle Rayner. She just thinks he's a weirdo.
I thought artist. That was interesting. I saw the preview images of the first couple pages. I think it's interesting that nobody knows who Kyle Rayner is.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was.
But that's because he spends the least amount of time on Earth of any of them, especially nowadays with the new Guardians.
Yeah.
When is he ever on the planet Earth?
Yeah. And it looks like Hal and Sinestro are still semi alive in Simon Baz's ring. This was a solid issue. I love the complex, modern take that they're taking on it with just our, you know, our times with just Muslims in America, the persecution that they do go through because of people in the Middle East that are not representing their true religion. You know what I mean?
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I do think it's kind of funny. This is an unrelated but sort of related thing. I do think it's kind of funny that the big idea with the new 52 was to get away from legacy characters and go back to original characters. And here we are already introducing new legacy characters.
Yep.
But hey, if it's done well,
it's
by all
done
means,
well.
Do it.
And the Third Army they look pretty cool, and they look like freaky zombies. So, and I love the costume of Simon Baz. He has the best Green Lantern costume. The best.
Yeah, it's a cool-looking costume.
So anyway, I'm going to give it total adore it.
Cool.
Go get into the Green Lantern crossover Third Army.
This is the time if you want to get into Green Lantern.
Get the annual, because that'll help set it up, and then get
And get the
13.
Zero issue.
Get the zero issue and get 13. Do cool. It now. Anyway, next up, Swamp Thing.
Oh, Swamp Thing. This, too, was much better than the prologue to Rot World.
Yeah.
It came out hitting, and it came out really well.
And Poison Ivy and Deadman as the fighters for the Green. Did not see that coming.
Yeah,
Ivy you do, obviously, but not Deadman.
Deadman. Well, I guess it's because he can't be infected by the rot or anything, because he's Deadman. This also had some really interesting super fighting, but this time it was in the present day rather than in flashbacks.
Yep.
I mean, we have poor Swamp Thing is getting his butt kicked by the entire Teen Titans team.
Well, I thought that was cool to have the Teen Titans fight him.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed
that. Of all the
that.
People, I mean, we've got, he decapitates Kid Flash. He Ivy puts a sword through Red Robin's head.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, who shows up? But frickin' Superboy.
Yep.
And how in the world is poor Swamp Thing gonna fight frickin' Superboy?
I don't know.
Also, I thought Superboy was an android.
He's human. He's a DNA clone of Superman.
Oh. Well, when I looked at the book on this, when I looked at the cover, it looked like he was a robot.
Yeah, I know. He was, in the old continuity, he's introduced in the Death of Superman storyline, and he's the DNA of Superman. I think they also have a human component as well, not alien. And I think
I don't know. Whatever.
He's made in the new continuities. I think he's a clone of Superman. I think with his DNA. I don't know how they got it, but
wasn't he? But then, wasn't the old one the clone of Lex Luthor and Superman?
I might have.
Wasn't
been.
It their baby?
I think it might.
They
have
should
been.
Have put. They should have put everything behind them and just raised that baby together.
Really?
Come on, guys. You
well,
need to be responsible parents.
In Young Justice, that's the case. It's Lex Luthor's DNA and Superman.
They need to be responsible parents.
They do. Because he's kind of running amok and getting crazy.
Get it together, guys.
So,
anyway, how did you feel about Swamp Thing?
I love Swamp Thing. I love the art. I love the story. I
feel
love
like
the
it's a consistently great comic to look at. Yannick Paquette does amazing art. but it just isn't written with the same narrative impulse that Lemire writes Animal Man.
Really? So I love the writing with Swamp Thing. I really
It's
did.
Good. It's good, but I think I'm going to have to get down to only one Snyder book a month, and I can't decide if I do Batman or Swamp Thing. One of the two is leaving the pull list.
Yeah, I would do Batman over Swamp Thing, because I feel like there's more interesting stories, but I'm a Batman fan.
I don't know. I might just have to borrow your Batman during the death of the family. I might pull it off.
Because I will be getting a lot of those Batman titles.
I might pull it off.
Oh, that makes sense. There you go. All right, World's
Next
Finest.
Next up, one I'm definitely pulling off the pull list. World's Finest. I had hoped, with George Perez leaving this book, that we'd get something decent. I'm done with this book. I'm signing off. I'm finished with it. It has consistently disappointed me for the past 6 issues, and I simply don't have the money to spend on it anymore. There are other books that I would rather spend my money on, so I'm going to save my money and stop buying Huntress and Power Girl. As much as I like those two characters, I will just buy the Ami Kami special with Power Girl in it. Give me a break. Real Power Girl instead of this horrible sham of a Power Girl that we get in the stupid book. Anyway, ignore it. Stop picking it up. If you all stop buying it, then it will either have to get better or it will get canceled and something else will come in instead.
Yeah.
Because apparently it's selling really good. It's like the second best-selling female-led book that DC has.
That's because it's Power Girl and Huntress. It's just like with Batman and the Dark
Knight. But it's selling more than Batgirl. It's selling more than Wonder Woman.
Batman the Dark Knight and Detective Comics were selling very, very well.
It's selling better than Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but because
that is a travesty.
I know it is.
Hey, Wonder Woman is cooler than Huntress and Power Girl. As much as I love Huntress and Power Girl, Wonder Woman is Wonder Frickin' Woman.
I know, but why was the Dark Knight and the Detective Comics both selling well when they were written poorly?
Because it was
and
Batman.
Exactly. It's the same exact Batman thing. So consumers, buy for writers. Don't buy because of characters.
It's true, guys.
Then crappy products will still get made.
It's true.
There is no change.
Anyway, I'm just disappointed because I really like the characters, but I'm not buying that book anymore. I'm done.
All right. Well, there you go. Next on to Image.
Image. I have 3 Image books.
Yeah.
I'll make this quick because we have a lot to get through still. Fatale, issue 8. What else can I say than what I say every time this book comes out? If you are buying it, you enjoyed it. If you're not buying it, wait for the trades. Just wait for the trades. First trade's already out. Go pick it up. Enjoy it. It's called Death Chases Me. It's stunningly beautiful because Sean Phillips' art is some of the best-looking art you will ever, ever see. I felt like I got a bunch of answers to my questions without getting all of them. The questions continue to pile up even while I'm given answers. I don't know how much longer the series is going to run. I don't know what Brubaker and Phillips have in the plans. Because originally I just thought it was a miniseries of 5, but we're already to issue 8, and I think that we're going to keep going at least to 11 or 12, at least in terms of solicits I've seen on the Image website. I don't know how much longer it's going to run, but I just want it to run for all of them anymore. Because Phillips and Brubaker are one of the seminal teams in comics, and this is some of their best work. So adore it, obviously.
Did Phillips draw for him when he first started Captain America?
No, I don't believe so. Maybe. But I believe all they've done is all of the criminal books, the Incognito stuff, all that kind of stuff they've done together.
Okay.
So they've been working together for over a decade at this point, but it's all on noir, crime, thrillers, supernatural stuff like this.
Not Marvel.
I don't think so. I could be wrong. But I don't have the time to Google it right now. Because we're recording.
Next up, Harvest.
Harvest. This is issue 3 of a 5-issue miniseries. And I finally... I wanted to pick up issue 1, but they didn't have it in my store when it first came out 2 months ago. But I was finally able to get my hands on issues 1 and 2 a couple of weeks ago. But I was going to hold off on reviewing it until I had a current issue.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it a high explore it. It's a miniseries worth looking into if you like moody, violent, morally twisted tales. This is, in case you don't know, it's about a doctor who has a very big crack problem, and so he gets disbarred, and it gets his medical license taken away, and then he is given an offer to come work for a clandestine group harvesting the organs of other people for rich, rich people who don't want to wait on the organ donation list.
Really?
Uh-huh. That's what it's about. It's about him pulling the organs out of unsuspecting and unwilling people to give to rich people. but he doesn't feel comfortable doing it. So starting in this issue, he starts fighting back. This is gory. It's bloody. It's, like I say, it's very morally twisted. It's very much an adult book. It's an image book that is for grown-ups. But if you like that kind of stuff, if the idea of a rogue surgeon who removes people's organs, he's decided in this issue, spoiler alert, in case you want to go back and read it, skip ahead 30 seconds. He's decided to go and collect all those organs that he put into people.
Really?
He's taking them back.
Oh.
I don't know what he's going to do when he takes them back, but he's going to go to the people who he, like these rich people, and take all of these illicit organs back. This is a screwed up series. It's really great. Wow. It's really good. Thanks, Image, for making good books. So like I say, High Explorer. It's got two more issues. I'm really excited. I'm really excited for issue 5, especially because then I'll see the whole thing as one united sum and see how I feel about it. Last up, Non-Humans. This is the first, I think, of a 4-issue series called Non-Humans. It's written by Glenn Brunswick. And the art is by Wills Portacio. And I really wanted to like this book. Everyone said that it was basically kind of like Blade Runner meets Toy Story. And I like Toy Story okay, and I freaking love Blade Runner. It's one of my favorite movies. And it just didn't work for me. I felt like the art was really kind of inconsistent. They don't do a very good job with the script of letting me know anything to keep me wanting to pay attention. It was a flat narrative, mediocre art, lots of wasted potential. I'm going to ignore it. I'm not going to pick up the rest of the series.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to bother. Even though it's even only a 4-issue series, I'm not going to bother. I'm just going to stay home.
Well, there you go.
I don't have the money for it.
Yeah. If it's not worth your time, well, I guess it's worth your money. But
yeah.
That's just surprising because usually every Image comic you pick up...
This is the first Image one that has genuinely disappointed me and that I won't bother buying more of.
Yeah.
Because all the other Image books I'm buying, America's Got Powers, Fatale, Prophet, Glory, Saga. Oh my gosh. So many good... Harvest. So Debris. So many good series that the Image is putting out this year. This is the one that disappointed me.
Wow. There you go.
Granted, that's a pretty great track record.
Yeah, but. Yeah. No. Every company has to have their sore spot.
I guess.
All right, moving on to Marvel. Amazing Spider-Man number 695.
This is the start of the end game.
Yeah.
This is Dan Slott's big end game. And it could get interesting.
I thought it was okay.
I'm going to give it an explore it.
Yeah, me too.
I missed Umberto Ramos on art. Yeah. I know a lot of people don't like him.
How do you not like him?
I don't know. A lot of people complained about last issue. I thought his art was spot on last issue. His, like, super cartoony style, for I feel me, like, works his, very, very well for Spider-Man.
Yeah, and his art is one of the reasons why I was contemplating picking it up earlier. But then I'm not a big fan of Dan Slott.
I feel like Spider-Man. Slott has done some good stuff. In case you didn't read Spider Island.
Which I haven't.
Go borrow the trade from the library and you'll be sold. You'll be like, oh, Dan Slott, you can write. But why did Alpha suck so bad?
There's three story arcs I've tried to get into. And the only reason I'm staying on this one is because it's
the end game.
It's the end game.
You got six more issues before this book ends.
That's the
only reason.
The Lizard one I didn't care for. Alpha I didn't care for.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't either.
But I mean, it was solid. There's a lot of I like the full page spread of Madame Web, and you see all this stuff that can happen in the future. I mean, it's very
intriguing. All this stuff happening in the Marvel universe all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, there's everything in that page. There is so much going on there.
So that was fun.
I'm really so much. You've got X-23 fighting Hazmat. You've got Captain America doing heaven only knows what. You've got little Ant-Man in his Future Foundation outfit. This is Marvel Now is what she's seeing.
Yeah, I mean, you see the Hulk and Captain America running together.
Yeah, this is Marvel Now.
Yep.
You see the all-new X-Men.
I wonder if this could be... Well, no, never mind.
What were you going to say? Say it
I was
anyway.
Going to say that I wonder if this could be like Flashpoint for the new 52, but I don't think it is.
No, they're not going to reboot.
No, but you know that series where it just kind of explained why it was happening?
Uh-huh. I don't know that that's going to happen.
No,
because
not.
There's no like... The important thing about Marvel Now is that there's no cosmic event that's causing everything to change.
Yeah.
It's just causing people to change their behavior because of the cosmic event of the Phoenix.
Yeah,
I think which we'll talk about.
I think it's just this is just a fun teaser.
Oh, it's a great teaser.
So, I'm going to give a great teaser. The ending got me a little interested with the big.
Yeah, we're afraid again. Spoiler alert! Skip 30 seconds ahead. I'm afraid that his identity is going to go public again.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is.
And so, what's going to happen? Because for those of you who don't know, word on the street is that Superior teaser we saw for January a few months ago was it's going to be the new Spider-Man book. Because they've re-released it. They've re-released it with Slott on it, Humberto Ramos, and some of the other artists. I think Gage is on it. And they've re-released the word Superior with a little bit of hint of blue on the top and a little bitty hint of red on the bottom, like it's
so
Spidey.
So what makes Spider-Man...
So what is going to make Spider-Man Superior?
And why is Dan Slott still writing it? Because I thought they were saying that he was going to be done with issue 700.
He's going to be done with The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the name of the book anymore.
I know. So I got to be honest, I'm a little disappointed. I was hoping to get a new writer. So I've not been a fan of Dan Slott.
Yeah, when Slott does good, he does good, but this has just been okay. But I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful. Please... impress me with these last five issues, Dan Slott. Please impress me. Make me super excited about the January launch.
Yep, yep.
Because I know he can, because he has before. He just needs to do it again.
Yeah.
He can. Okay.
Avengers versus X-Men number 12. The big final issue of this year-long crossover event.
Well, half a year.
Half a year.
6 months.
6 months.
Explore it?
It's felt like a year.
It has felt like a year. Explore it, I guess. Big things are going to happen in the Marvel Universe.
I love the cover.
The book still feels like it fizzles to me.
That's what I heard.
So much promise, especially that Zero issue had me so excited about
and
this series.
Hoping Scarlet Witch, I can't think of...
They finally mattered again.
Oh, do they?
They finally mattered. That's the reason why the Phoenix is banished, is because they work together.
Okay, because it felt like...
If you don't know, what's Hope's power?
I don't know.
Hope's power is to mimic.
Oh.
So, Scarlet Witch uses her probability-altering powers. Hope mimics her probability-altering powers. And they basically kick Cyclops' butt from Heck to Breakfast. The two of them together kick his butt. Kick, like, beat the Phoenix out of him.
Really? In this issue?
In this issue. And then, Hope absorbs the Phoenix... like she was supposed to the whole damn time.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Scarlet Witch together decide no more Phoenix. And they scatter the Phoenix power.
How they do that?
Scarlet Witch's power. She can do whatever she wants.
That's true.
Like she is so overpowered when you think about what she can actually do. But I feel like this finally rehabilitated her as a hero. Because I know they've been trying for the last couple of years to come back from the House of M, which that was a real deep hole to dig her out of. She destroyed the entire mutant race.
Yeah.
With one phrase. And granted, like, they explained in the Children's Crusade how that happened and why that happened. But the fact of the matter is, she destroyed the entire mutant race. So it needed to be a tough road back. And it was for her. But I feel like she's finally a hero again, which is why we'll see her starting next week in the Uncanny Avengers team.
Yep.
So anyway, this book ends with more mutants on the planet because that's what they do with the Phoenix power. More mutants appear as they scatter the Phoenix Force. The Phoenix Force goes into all of these people who might have been mutants before the No More Mutants thing happened, and they all have powers now. So we're going to see the development of the mutant race all over again. So
that's kind of fun.
This is stuff. This is really is a culmination of 12 years worth of crossovers and big concepts has all come to culmination here. So as a matter of like tying everything up and starting a totally new thing, I have to give AVX props. I felt like Jason Aaron did as much as he could with how this had to end, and it was a good issue. But it wasn't a great issue.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the whole... I think it'll read better as a whole thing. And again, there were some issues that were really useless. There were some issues that were really great. But I'd still say that the whole thing overall is probably the best like full universe crossover that Marvel's had in a decade.
Yeah.
Because most of their crossovers weren't that good. Civil War, great concept, bad execution.
Yep.
Secret Invasion, stupid concept, horrible execution. Dark Reign, dumb concept, dumb execution. So I feel like
Siege,
this was
Did you ever read Siege?
Oh my gosh. So anyway, this was a cool concept and okay execution.
Yeah.
And it set the stage for a really big change in things, and I'm excited about that change.
See, I think DC does really great crossovers. Like Final Crisis, I love
Final See, Crisis. I didn't like Final Crisis. Really? The only DC crossover that I can ever say that I've read that I really loved was the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh man, the 80s love one. Final Crisis, love Blackest Night, Identity Crisis.
Yeah, see, I don't I like love any DC of those
crossovers.
So I'm glad that somebody likes them.
Oh, love them.
But I don't like most crossovers. And like I read them like a sucker. That's what happens to me. There's been one great crossover I think I've ever read, and that's Spider-Man. Spider-Man was like balls to the wall amazing, every page of it. But that's the only one that I can think of that I'm like, yeah, that crossover was freaking awesome, man. And it wasn't a whole universe crossover. It was one Spidey meeting another Spidey. Mm-hmm. And that's why it worked.
I absolutely love crossovers.
I'm glad.
I love them.
They're anyway. For you. Anyway, yeah. So ultimately, I'm going to give an explore it to the whole series of AVX. If you want to find out why everything changes in Marvel now, what's the impetus behind the Uncanny Avengers, it's an interesting storyline, and you should know what happened. So maybe pick it up in a trade or borrow it from a friend. All I know is I'm glad that Scarlet Witch has kind of redeemed herself. I'm glad Hope is still around. Hope didn't die, because I was afraid poor Hope was going to have to die. And I'm glad she's still around. And I think that more than anything, this is going to set up a really interesting future for the X half of the Marvel Universe, because their two big leaders are gone.
Cyclops and Professor
Cyclops
X.
is in prison, and it's a pretty ingenious prison they've got around his head to contain his laser bolt vision. And then he's inert the entire time you ever see him, because he can't move, because he's all chained up, and he can't do anything with his super laser eyes. So he's gone. Xavier is dead. So who – and as much as Wolverine has been running the Jean Grey school, he's still Wolverine.
No,
he's not a leader.
Beast.
Wolverine is not a leader. I feel like if anybody's going to step in and lead the mutant race, it's got to be Beast.
Yeah. I hope it is. I like Beast as a character.
But I think that it's going to kind of diffuse the idea of who leads mutant kind. Are these new X-Men from the 60s going to come back with their idealism and prop everything up?
Oh,
or
that's interesting.
I don't know. If you're an X-reader, if you're an X-book reader, I feel like there are a lot of possibilities after this. The Avengers, great. We're going to relaunch with some new Avengers. That crap happens all the time. Happens every 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
Great. I'm excited to see the new creative teams, whatever. But if you're an X-book reader, this is going to be much more interesting for you. As I'm not an X-book reader other than Extreme X-Men, because I like Dazzler, it doesn't have as big of an effect on me as a reader. But if you're an X-reader, it's going to have big ramifications for you and your characters that you love.
Yeah.
So, yeah, ultimately, I think that it was a successful crossover.
There you go. All right, now on to AVX versus number 6.
Now, if you all remember last month, I really hated issue 5 because it was a fight between Hawkeye and Angel that didn't feel in character, and it was a fight between Storm and Black Panther that just exacerbated their issues, their breaking up relationship, and I hated it. But number 6, 9 storylines, 9 fights of awesomeness. The first one is Hope versus Scarlet Witch while they're in Kunlun, and they're fighting the crap out of each other. And Hope sucker punches Scarlet Witch, and it's maybe my favorite thing. Look at that look of jubilation on Hope's face after she sucker punches Scarlet Witch. It's hilarious.
This was a comedy issue.
It always is. Other than number 5, this has always been played for laughs in big explosions. And then there's 8 little 1-to-2 page stories, like Cyclops versus Captain America.
Cyclops versus Captain America was one of the funniest things
Science
I've
battle.
A long time.
Captain America versus Havoc. Hulk versus Domino. Toad versus Jarvis.
Jarvis.
Spider-Woman versus the X-Women, kinda, which we'll talk about in the villain moment of the week, Hawkeye. Iron Fist versus Iceman. And finally, Squirrel Girl versus Pixie, which is them playing with toys. This was darling. If you've been reading AVX, then you'll pick this up and you'll be like, this is great stuff. This is beautiful stuff. But if you're not reading AVX, then obviously don't buy this. But borrow it from someone.
Want to read it, though. Even
borrow
if
it, from,
reading, I
borrow it from someone.
I don't think you need to read Avengers versus X-Men.
Well, that's what it even says right here in the beginning.
This issue.
If you read the the info page at the beginning says, the question, the last issue? Oh man, there must be all sorts of continuity that carries over from the first five issues, right? Answer, not a chance. Want to know what you missed? Okay, imagine an Avenger. Now, imagine an X-Man. Now one of them punches the other. Multiply that by 10 and that's what you missed. Some awesome fights. But this issue has got 9 more dust-ups for your fight-watching pleasure. That's basically, or, you know, it says things like, do they all spin directly out of the Avengers vs. X-Men event? Don't you worry about that. Everything you need to know about that story is in the book's title. That's it. We could go on about Phoenix Fives and Kunlun's and Chaos Magics and Hopes, but you don't need it. Clear your brain and get ready for punches.
Yeah, because I read read 2 or 3 of the fights, and I don't read Avengers vs. X-Men at all. I still thoroughly enjoyed what I was reading because it's so funny.
It is
worth Captain America vs. Cyclops.
It's played for laughs, and it's really funny. Anyway, I adored this issue of this book. It was really great.
Yeah, it was the few that I read was great. All right, now moving on to the big Marvel title, Daredevil End of Days number 1. It's an 8-issue miniseries written by Brian Michael Bendis. This is 10 years in the future. This is
And David Mack.
This is the end of Daredevil. Brayden, what did you think?
Oh my gosh. While I love the swashbuckling style of Wade's current run, this is the Daredevil I'm used to. This is the Daredevil that's been written since Frank Miller took this book over in 81. Daredevil has gone literally to hell and back. And so this is a fitting culmination to that type of Daredevil story. It is a fitting epitaph. If you've read any of Bendis's run on Daredevil, it was great. He did phenomenal work with Daredevil. The art is stunning. The mystery of why Daredevil was where he was, what that word means that he said, and the cliffhanging ending. I can't wait to see what happens to this.
And when he dies, because this is about his death. When he dies, it was gruesome.
It was very gruesome.
It was very gruesome. I really enjoy this issue. I think the potential for it is just through the roof.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give the issue number 1 explore it, but I cannot wait for...
I'm predicting another classic.
Yeah, I think it will be.
I think this will be one of those books that in 20 years they still sell the trade of.
Oh, yeah, because, look, it's a setup issue. And setup issues aren't always the most amazing thing ever, but the potential with... What does it all mean? And we'll talk about a spoiler in our villain
plus,
of the week.
Plus, in terms of like bang for your buck, this is maybe the best deal you can buy this week.
Yeah.
Because it was 34 pages of content for $3.99, which is what Marvel will often charge you for 20, plus you get your free digital copy.
Yep.
So this was a steal of a deal this week.
Yeah. Great issue. I would say go pick it up.
Go if you like Daredevil at all, or if you're interested in Daredevil, maybe this should be your step on point. I know he's dying, maybe not the best step on point, but
it embodies what I think Daredevil is.
Read this and decide if you need to read more Daredevil.
Yeah.
I think you do, dear reader. If you're not already reading Daredevil, you should be.
Oh, it's a great series. I think the best one Marvel's putting out.
Definitely one of them.
All right, so now that's reviews for the week. We're going to go quickly do our hero and villain moment of the week. So, Brayden, hero moment.
My hero moment of the week, both of my hero and villain moments from the week come from Versus because it was so much fun this week. My hero moment of the week is a fight between Cyclops and Captain America called Verbal Abuse. Written by Bendis and Jim Mahood and Joe Caramagna, the guy who usually does the lettering, also helped with some of the writing. Anyway, it's just one page of Cyclops and Captain America making fun of each other. And it's hilarious. And there's one point, I'll just quote the one, where Cyclops, you know, says to Cap, I'd like to meet that person that found and unfroze you and slapped the beep out of them. And Captain America answers back with, I thought your mutant power was being shockingly less interesting than your girlfriend's. And then little Spider-Man is down in the corner saying, oh, snap!
Yeah, that's the funniest thing.
It's hilarious. It's beautiful. It's hideous. It's really funny. It's one solid page of comedy. And if that is what all of AVX had been like, crossover of the millennium, baby.
Yep.
But it wasn't. But anyway, I really liked it. I like that even as Cyclops is walking up, there's a little sound effect next to him that says strut, strut, strut. It's that kind of thing. There's a little like shark on the side that says yo.
Oh, there is? I didn't notice that. There's a little shark. Yeah, there's the
yo!
Shark.
Yo, it's that kind of thing.
You can just tell that people are having fun with that one page.
Clearly having fun. Anyway.
All right, so my hero moment of the week has to be just the whole backup story to Action Comics, Boy and His Dog.
Crypto! I just love Crypto.
I love dogs. And to see that... So Crypto in issue 3 goes to the Phantom Zone to protect Jor-El and you know, Kal-El from the Phantom Zone people trying to escape when right before Krypton is destroyed. And so you now know that Crypto, the whole entire life of Superman, the whole entire life, he's been by his side, always there to help him in the fights, always there to when Superman was down to comfort him. It's like that embodies what a dog is all about. Dogs in general, to me, are the embodiment of just love and loyalty and devotion. I mean, granted, you have your crazy dogs, but I mean, when you have a crappy day and you get home and everyone's mad at you, but you have that dog just comes up to you and just wants to be with you. I mean, it just, dogs are man's best friend, and it was easily portrayed in
cute.
This backup story.
So even Krypton dogs are Krypton kids' best friends.
Yep. So that has to be my, as a dog lover, that was my hero moment of the week. So anyway, now villain moment of the week has to be, and this is a spoiler for Daredevil End of Days, so fast forward a little bit, but Daredevil kills Kingpin.
Yeah.
He kills the Kingpin in front of everybody.
In the street.
In the street. And the thing is, he just kind of shrugs and says, what else could I do? I mean, it's just, you know that he is emotionally defeated. He is emotionally defeated because he realized that I've tried everything I can to make it right, doing the moral, just way. And finally, I'm just done.
Yeah.
I'm done. And it was sad to see how defeated he was emotionally. And that to me, just that was heart-wrenching to see Daredevil give in and kill the Kingpin. Villain moment of the week. So,
with
Brayden,
good reason.
You.
My villain moment of the week is Hawkeye's brain. Because
he's
Hawkeye is, he is kind of a perv here. He's sitting on the Quinjet and he's dreaming to himself. And what does he dream to himself? Erotic battles between Spider-Woman and Emma Frost, or Spider-Woman and Storm, or Spider-Woman and Psylocke. Clearly, Hank has a thing for Jessica. I had no idea. Or Clint, I mean. Clint has a thing for Jessica, clearly. Yeah, it's really... It's funny, but Hawkeye's also just kind of a perv. And I was unimpressed with his perviness.
And granted, you know, the girls are in their costumes, so it's not like they're in, like...
No, but like Spider-Woman is pulling Emma Frost's costume down and like they're all sexy and erotic and you're just like, Hawkeye, you're a perv. So, Hawkeye, your brain is my villain moment of the week.
As it should be. All right. Hey, well, those are reviews for the week. Definitely let us know through Twitter, our Facebook page, or just email us. Let us know what you think, if you agree, disagree. And until next time, happy reading.
This has been a reviews episode of Between the Bubbles. We thank you all for listening today. Our bumper music has been provided by Brian Boyko and Kevin McLeod. We are produced by Almost Midnight Media and are released under a Creative Commons license.